So here's where we are now with Steve and Matz after the Jays 5-4 loss to the Oakland Athletics last night. Mr. Barker started the year 4-0, sailing along. Least six innings in his first three starts. And I think we could say that probably a little bit of a surprise, considering he was good in spring training, but considering his track record coming into this year, his recent track record, I think we just say it's a little bit of a surprise. He contributed, I think, to us viewing the Blue Jays starting rotation perhaps in a different light than when the season started. Last two outings, five innings last night, 3 2/3 innings the game before against Washington. He's given up 15 hits in his last two games. That's more than half of the total he's given up through six starts, 29 hits, 11 earned runs, and that is a vast majority of the 17 earned runs he's given up overall. I guess the one thing is the walks. The walks have been down a bit. It's early, but his ERA has gone in three starts from 147 to 478.
Ooh.
Now, you heard him talk about the changeups yesterday, but I know you have a bigger question, and it's the same question I have when you look back at what was working for Steven Matz. I get his point. The changeup, quote-unquote, got him against Washington as well. But, Bark, 92 pitches last night. 92 pitches. Only 38 of them sinkers. That the sinker that early in the season, we're raving about the sinker.
Yep.
Especially now, everybody's talking about launch angles and
yep.
velo. And if you sink a fastball, it's hard to get the launch angle. And what's happened here?
That's a great question. Though I have no idea, and I'm sure Petey doesn't either. That's one of those things when you watch him pitch. He's throwing a cutter last night. What? A cutter?
Why?
I have no idea. Maybe he was trying to throw a slider, and it was not a good slider, and it was morphed into a cutter. I don't know. It was a bunch of you could see the one that was moving and looked like a cutter was 88 to 89. The slider was more 83, 84. That's the difference, is the mile per hour. That would tell you that one of them is he's trying to snap it off back foot to a righty. He's trying to get weak contact with the 88, 89. Where's the 94, 95 mile an hour sinker? That's the one question. If you're Danny Jansen, why don't you run out there and go, look, the however many starts before this, we've been dominating people with the sinker. We get a head in with the sinker, and then that allows you to miss, which is what he said. My changeup not in good. Nobody can throw secondary pitches where they want all the time. That's why you establish something hard in, especially when you're a left-handed pitcher and you're facing a bunch of right-handed hitters. You establish in, get them thinking in there, get them thinking, okay, that thing's got a little hair on it. I got to get it out in front a little bit. I got to open the front hip. Now I can, that allows me to miss a little bit with my secondary pitch. That allows me to get away with a changeup that might be elevated. But if you don't throw it, why would I ever look for it? Why would I even have to worry about it? That's the thing. And now he's starting to throw the cutter, the slider, the changeup, the slow breaking ball.
It's almost like he's pitching backwards.
It's almost like he's scared to throw it. I mean, I don't want to say scared because that's a big word, but it's almost like you just wonder why all of a sudden the last two games that you're facing, is Oakland that good of a hitting team? Really? Like it's one of those things where, again, I said this the last time he left to start. You just have to, for me, walk away from one of those starts and go, I got beat. I threw my best stuff. My best stuff I threw out there just so happens tonight it didn't work out. Can he walk away saying that? And then you saw him there when he's taken out, he's throwing his glove. If I'm Charlie, I'm saying, okay, the five, which is coming up the next inning, which you have to go out to, which is 5, 6, 7 in the order, guess what they are against you? They're 5 for 6 with 3 RBIs. What do you want me to do? I'm not going to run you back out there. You don't throw in your best pitch. I do too. I love it that he's all fired up, but it's one of those things where you can't go back to old habits. This is maybe the reason why in New York it didn't work out for him. Is for whatever reason, he just doesn't want to establish one thing. You see a guy in Ryu. Look at him. There's 88 to 91 carving people up. Why do you think that is? He establishes that endoritis. His misses are good with the heater and off the plate.
Can't do anything with those.
Exactly right. If you miss, you elevate it. That way, if they do put it in play, it's a little weak pop-up or it's a jam shot to the second baseman. That's why he does those things, is because he's left-handed. He understands that I'm not always going to be able to throw my changeup where I want to throw it. I'm not always going to be able to, you know, snap my slow little get-me-over breaking ball exactly where I want to throw it. But if I establish that one pitch in, it'll allow me to get efficient outs. Efficient outs means when you get two strikes, how do you get a guy out? And that's the other thing you're starting to notice with him a little bit too. He'll get to 1-2, 0-2. How does he get guys out? Mm-hmm. And then it's like after he gets to two strikes, it's more of that, you know, now I'm starting to try and make the perfect pitch instead of just trying to do exactly what you did to get to two strikes.
You know his next outing is going to be against, eh?
Yeah, the Astros, the short porch and left.
I was just thinking that. And they got some right-handed bats.
Exactly, they
have some guys they'll be lining up in the bat rack for a taste of that, man.
Okay, why? You can't blame them. If you know a guy doesn't really want to throw his best pitch, which, you know, they got stats out the wing. They're going to look at every single stat and go, well.
Stat out the wang?
Yeah, I don't know what that
yin is. Yin-yang is what
yin-yang.
You
said. Yin-yang, yeah. But it's.
Jesus, it's just cut the stats out the wang.
I just don't understand.
Go sell a car.
I did already. Didn't work.
I'm with you, man. I'm with you completely. We'll see against Houston, but I think you're right. You know, it was pretty smooth sailing out the gate, and let's see if all the good stuff we've heard about Steven Matz materializes. Now you are right. I did not know the breakdown was that much. If you told me at the end of the game, how many sinkers do you throw? I said, I don't know, maybe 50.
Yeah.
38.
The good pitchers, what do? They make in-game adjustments. When something's not working, you got to go to something else. Maybe it's just one of those things, the last couple of starts, the sinker, the feel of the sinker. It's not really a grip it and rip it pitch. It's more of a, you have to have feel, you have to have good extension.
That's
you got to have a little bit more pronation to the end of your delivery. I'm hoping that it's more of that he just doesn't have the good feel for it. And now the cutter is, you know, he's trying to get a lot of weak contact with the cutter and the slow breaking ball. It's not going to work. Go, Bergen came in. I text you the last time he started. And I said, you ever seen a guy throw 20 pitches, 20 fastballs? He threw 30 pitches. How many hitters he threw?
28.
28. How many
runs
he
got a strikeout. He got a strikeout on a
slow breaking ball. He even shook to it.
That's got to piss you off. You're a hitter. It's like, come on.
It's funny that
I know, but come on, man.
You sort of have to know that you've never seen a guy shake off, and then he shakes off and he throws you a breaking ball.
Mm.
I know it's lefty on lefty, but
do you think, Kevin? I'm just looking at the box score from that game. So bottom of the second inning, Matz gets Matt Olson the strikeout. Then he gives up a double to left.
Mm-hmm.
Now he's in the stretch. Double to right. Home run. And he's back. Wind up. Ground out. Strikeout looking.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm wondering if that maybe has some sort of... But there was no... The velocity didn't drop off. So
95. 95 with some sink to it. That's a pretty good pitch.
I don't know. You get a man on base. Are you reluctant to throw your sinker in case it goes in the dirt?
I would think you'd throw it more.
Yeah.
She'd want to get a ground ball.
Yeah.
Double
to right field. That was a well-hit ball. I think maybe there are right fielders in this game who might have caught it. Kevin Biggio was in right field.
Yeah, you know, again, it's one of those things you have to put Kevin Biggio in the lineup. Where are you going to put him?
I don't, but what I'm saying is
that gives up ground balls who throws his sinker, you need to have a good left side of the infield.
Yeah, but I'm thinking George Springer makes that play in right field.
I mean, if he's not fatigued.
I guess my point is, and I understand what you're saying, but if I've got a guy, a lefty on the mound, and he's throwing a sinker, yeah, I guess you want your best defense on the left side. All right.
Mm.
I guess I'm just asking.
You're begging? Hopefully it's just he doesn't have the feel for it and he finds the feel of it
because
he's going to need it in Houston. You're going to need it.
Kevin Biggio led off. You made an interesting point. The final score was 5-4. The last out of the game was Kevin Biggio. striking out. Standing on deck, Bo Bichette. Standing behind Bo, Vladdy Jr. Standing behind him, well, not standing behind him, but in the dugout, Teoscar Hernandez.
Who would you rather have up? I'll give you everybody a question to answer
Kevin
to Biggio themselves.
Kevin got the most at-bats of anybody in the team last night because he let off.
There you go. But who would you rather have up with two outs down a run in the ninth inning against a left-handed pitcher? Bo Bichette or Kevin Biggio?
Yep.
Some of the things that when the lineups are ran out there is just a perfect world. We all know what the lineup should look like. When it's not perfect, you want to give your best guys all the opportunities to do the most damage. Did they do that?
No.
Don't let it beat you.
My only thinking with Kevin Biggio, and maybe we'll have to wait and see if George Springer is in the lineup tonight. Was that a swing path thing with Montas?
It looked pretty straight to me. It's 98.
So.
I don't know. Yeah. I got no answers for that. I'm just saying, look, you don't have to be a smart guy. And it's not like they made that lineup out 2 weeks in advance. George Springer was in the game 2 days ago.
Right.
So they had to have made that lineup, on the plane.
And they also said, Charlie said very clearly, and I take him at his word in this instance, that it was a planned day off anyhow, that he was going to have the day off regardless.
Yeah, he also, after the game, said that he went to him and he said he couldn't go.
Yeah, but I'm saying this team, if this team tells me that there's a planned day off, I'm going to take it for granted that the high performance department, that they figured this out a while ago, that he was going to play three games and that this was going to be his planned day off. But that gets to your point, though. It's not like this snuck up on him.
Yeah, that you got sometimes use a little common sense that you want your best guys. You don't want at bats taken away from your best hitters. Is Kevin Biggio right now, a month from now, he might be one of your best hitters right now?
No.
Is he better than Bo?
No.
Is he better than Vladdy?
No.
Is he better than Teoscar?
No.
Is he better than Randall?
Nope.
It just doesn't, for whatever reason, they're going to continue to throw him in the, I know there's a lefty throwing today, but where do you think he's going to hit? Fifth?
Swing.
I mean, the lefty throws 91 with a sinker and a slider. That's pretty good. That's a giant uppercut. The slider will go into the uppercut swing and the sinker. It's nothing against Kevin. I'm a fan of Kevin's, but early in the season, when wins matter, and your division is not off to the hottest of starts, and you got some time, you could separate from other teams. And I don't know. It's very hard for me to say. When I was watching that game, I stayed up till after 12 o'clock watching it, and I'm thinking, Bo Bichette is on the on deck circle, and did not get to hit, and Kevin did.
We will be joined, by the way, by Gil Kim, Director of Player Development with the Blue Jays. He is, of course, in the dugout, part of his responsibilities. And we'll talk to Gil because the minor league season starts today. And, of course, the Jays, the focus of much of the attention for the Jays will be at AA New Hampshire and at AAA Buffalo. So we've got a lot to talk to Gil about the player assignments. The Jays suggested yesterday that Alejandro Kirk is going to be out for longer than the 10 days that he was originally said to be out with the hip flexor. We're looking now at maybe a month and a half. Danny Jansen isn't going to catch every day. One of the things Gil Kim said on Sunday in a Zoom call, he was asked about Riley Adams, who the Jays brought up. And he made the point essentially that Riley, although he has the most raw power, they think some of the most raw power in the organization, there's still an issue with contact. There's an issue with putting balls in play. And essentially, he's still learning how to game plan. He's learning all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not certain that's a guy you want handling a major league staff right now. Clearly, Danny Jansen's going to be the guy. The options for the Blue Jays, there's a lot of depth at the catching position. Unfortunately, mm-hmm. that depth is not yet ready, the major league level. The options would be Reese McGuire, who's not on the 40-man roster. People forget that Juan Graterol, was picked up as well.
Mm-hmm.
He is not on the 40-man roster. I mean, he's as old as time itself. was born.
They seem to be fans of Riley Adams.
Do you think we'll see like a 5-2 game sharing split or something like that?
I would certainly think initially? If you're wanting to get his feet wet, tonight's tonight. Anthony Kay, minor league guy, got a couple of pitches, breaking ball. You know, it's not the sharpest fastball in. You know, it's not the hardest to call a game with him. Maybe he runs into one. He's got a lefty throwing against them tonight who doesn't throw very hard. Look, there's a perfect game to get him out there. And it's not like Danny's tearing the cover off the baseball. So.
That's a big step up for Riley Adams.
Well, they don't seem to care about the minor league thing is not that big of a deal anymore. Like it used to be when I played, where you had to go and show that you could be really good at each level.
Right.
Yeah. You got a certain amount of bats you had to do it and a certain amount of games that you were playing in the field and to see if you were capable of handling those games. I don't think it matters as much anymore.
We will, of course, have a chance to ask Gil about the assignments, how the Blue Jays came to the decisions. I mean, the one that I think got a lot of people's attention, Kevin, was Alek Manoah, who's not pitched above single A.
No.
Going to triple A to start the year. Nate Pearson is there as well.
What did I tell you before we went on?
Well, I was going to ask you. I'm going to let you say what you said because I'm not going to pilfer it from you because I think it's a good point.
I said there's probably a reason why that Alek skipped a bunch of levels and went to AAA with Nate. The one thing that Nate for me needs to be pushed a little. Mm-hmm. He needs to have a little competition, and Alek Manoah doesn't seem like he's real shy about thinking that that's his mound. And you know, there's a little friendly competition. I'm not sure it's really friendly. The friendly thing, I always frown at that. I never had that when I was a player. I wanted to outdo everybody.
Yeah, you didn't want. You wanted to be the guy who got called up to the majors.
Every time I saw Rowdy Tellez trying to teach Vladdy how to play first base, made me a little scratch my head occasionally. Because where's Rowdy at now?
Yeah, but if you think you got a spot in the team, but guess what? Rowdy didn't have a spot in the team.
I'm saying it's all fun and games out there, you know, showing him how far he needs to stretch and when he needs to start trying to pick a ball. But you do know that you want to play too. So I do think there's a lot to that of why they sent him there. And you know, Alex probably not too far away.
And I'm sure the organization would like Nate to understand that Alek isn't that far away.
Yeah, and I'm going to say they're not going to come out and say that. But no. If you're playing, it doesn't take a brain surgeon to go, why is he skipping? I mean, he played in rookie ball, Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
He skipped like four levels.
And they've said, we'll have a chance to talk to Gil, and they've said that, you know, that they talk about his resiliency and his competitiveness, et cetera, but yeah, it's definitely a fascinating point. It's certainly got
just my... Just funny that, that Charlie attention. Has been saying that Nate needs to earn his way back onto the team. Those are very odd words.
The message appears to have gotten through,
though. Odd sentence to say about a guy that has, you know, has been talked about the way Nate's been talked about.
The message appears to have gotten through, though, because it's pretty clear. You know, Nate himself has said, yesterday when he did an interview, has said that, you know, he realizes that when the Jays bring him up, they want him to go five or six innings. Yeah, there's a suggestion that maybe he comes up in a week or so.
Oh, maybe.
Do you think he'll come up that early?
I don't.
I'm with you. I think
he's got to earn it.
I think he's going to be down there for a bit.
They don't want a project when he gets here.
They got enough to worry about right
now. There you go.
They got enough to worry about right now. Gil Kim is Director of Player Development with the Toronto Blue Jays. We will talk to Gil about the minor league assignments. And keep in mind, you know, the major leaguers did get to play 60 regular season games last year. There are a lot of guys in the minors. Austin Martin doesn't have a professional at bat yet.
Nope.
And he's at Double A.
How about that?
We'll talk to Gil Kim next. This is Baseball Central. This is Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Down, Barker.
Sorry, it's my ring.
9:37 is the first pitch tonight.
Yeah. Young Jeff Blair is going to be right in front of the TV.
That's why God invented Blue Jays in 30, my friend.
I know you're going to be taking notes at 115.
No, come on, give me. I watch more baseball than just about anybody you know. Anyhow, pregame is at 9 o'clock on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, Sportsnet Ontario, Sportsnet 1. First pitch at 9:40. Blue Jays talk immediately following with Rob Wong and Sho Alley. We're doing a special hour and a half Baseball Central.
Yes.
On Thursday ahead of that 3:37 first pitch. So that'll be good. And, of course, tomorrow's walk-off Wednesday, so we'll take your calls. Yeah. Hopefully the Jays will give us something to talk about tomorrow.
Oh, I'm sure.
Something about in a positive way.
Coming on.
Huh?
There'll be something good happening.
Ah, good
Maybe
feeling.
Maybe George is playing.
Anthony K. Cole Irvin. I got a feeling something good's going to happen tonight.
You don't mean that.
That's
do. Why you said those two names.
No, I do. I do. I'm optimistic. Huh? Then
who are you?
Tomorrow, Robbie Ray tomorrow night. It's going to be fascinating to see Robbie Ray against that lineup.
Don't change a thing.
Not at all. Keep the tight pants.
How about it?
Keep the tight pants.
Jump up and down to get in them.
Keep the 98. Life is good.
98 plays.
Gil Kim is director of player development with the Toronto Blue Jays. He is also, you'll see him in the dugout. He's part of Charlie Montoya's coaching staff. We're very pleased to be joined by Gil. Gil, where are you in Oakland with the team right now? Or are you, because I know the minor leagues are starting up tonight.
Yeah, I'm in Oakland here right now. So it's good to be here with you guys. But yeah, we're definitely excited for the minor league season to get started as well.
Boy, I mean, there hasn't been a minor league, or there wasn't a minor league season last year. There was the alternate site concept, obviously. How difficult then, Gil, was it to sit down and look at your minor leaguers and say, this guy's going to Double A, this guy's going to Triple A? Like, in some cases, I would think it might be fairly easy to make that decision, but when you're talking about guys who are in college, or in the case of a guy like Austin Martin, a guy who basically played last year only at the alternate site and then got some time in spring training. But I mean, you know, it's not like he got a month and a half worth of playing time necessarily. How do you guys go about picking where a guy is going to start the year? And is there some sort of erring on the side of caution that you do when you sit down to do this?
There's definitely a lot more. There were a lot more challenges, I'd say, this year in navigating those decisions than in years past. But we do really put a lot of thought and effort into where is the best place for each one of our players to go. You know, we factor in past experience, past performance, recent performance. But mainly it's factoring in their current developmental priorities, and then, you know, which level of competition and which staff and player environment will best allow that player to continue improving. So, you know, I think to your question, those, you know, whether you're aggressive or a little more conservative, it's really more on an individual basis. So this year specifically, yeah, we factored in guys' experience at the alt site. We factored in players who maybe had more games and competition last year, however they got them. We factor in health and how we saw them in spring training, maybe a little bit more this year than in years past. But I think overall, like with any year, we try to think of what's best for that player, what level of competition and what group of staff will best help them move forward.
I found that last part interesting, and it's a point you made on a Zoom call you did on Sunday, and you talked about specifically with Alek Manoah, and I just kind of want to boil it down to use him as an example right now, but you talked about the staff and player environment at AAA as being one of the reasons you thought it was a good fit for Alek. Can you maybe break that down for us a little bit, getting a little specific there, like when you say staff and player environment, and you're talking about a guy like Alek Manoah, what about that environment makes it the right place for Alek to start?
Sure. Well, I think first of all, with every one of our staffs at all the affiliates, we have a ton of confidence in the level of passion, knowledge, experience, and commitment that all our groups have. So, you know, we would feel confident sending a player to any one of the affiliates. With Alek specifically, and everybody's seen it, you know, he just has a special level of intensity, of competitive fire. And when you combine that with the elite stuff that he possesses too, it's an exciting package. He hasn't pitched really in full season, but you know, with the outside experience, with his experience in big league camp, we felt like challenging him to the highest competition level, you know, possible, which we thought was AAA would be a good experience for him. We felt like the competitiveness and the resiliency that he has would allow him, you know, even though he may struggle from time to time, you know, that would allow him to fight through and still focus on development. And then as far as the staff and players, you have a group of players who will continue to push him to be the, you know, the best pitcher, the best teammate possible, who've been in the big leagues as well. And then we have a ton of confidence in Casey Candel, Jeff Ware, and the staff there. These are coaches who've been in the game a long time, who've experienced the big league level. Obviously Casey as our field coordinator and Jeff Ware as our pitching coordinator for the last several years. These guys have just such a depth of knowledge and experience, having handled Nate Pearson's and other prospects as well. So, you know, it really wasn't one specific thing, but it was really the combination of all that made us think, man, this is going to be a good experience for Alec, and hopefully one where he can take the most advantage possible.
Okay, when I heard Austin Martin was going to Double A, I remembered back at my career and remembering how hard it was for me to make jumps, go from one level to the other, just that mental jump, that defensive jump. Everything's a little quicker the higher you go. And he's basically skipping all of that. I want to know from you what you think will be the hardest adjustment for him. Which side of the ball? Would it be defensive side or his offensive side?
That's a really good question. I think with Austin, if you look at Austin's background, he was a key player on the 15U Team USA team that competed in Mexico way back when. He's played with Team USA. He's played and won a national championship. This is a young man who, you know, despite not having played an official professional game, his experiences with a bigger stage, his experiences with competing to the highest levels of wherever he's at have been very, very extraordinary. So, Austin, like Alec, Austin is one of the most intense competitors I've ever seen. He works his tail off. He's committed to getting better. He's resilient enough to go through ups and downs as well. And so we felt like, again, with Austin, we could challenge him and he'll be able to handle those challenges, and he'll be able to continue focusing on his development. As far as, you know, offensively, with the level of plate discipline and contact skills that he already possesses, those are two skills that generally tend to translate well as you move up levels. So, you know, we feel confident about where he'll be offensively, and then defensively too. He's a very athletic player who has experience playing multiple spots, and we feel like shortstop and center field would be two spots that will challenge him too. So probably too early to say where specifically he'll be most challenged, but we're just excited to see him at that level and see him progress.
I'm also wondering, with some of the experimentation we're going to see in terms of rules this year, and I know you guys have had a lot in your plate, but we know that Major League Baseball is going to institute things like some limits on defensive shifting, defensive positioning, things of that nature. How is that going to factor in? And I'm thinking, you know, particularly you've got guys like Groshans and Martin who I are going to split time between the infield and the outfield. I think one of them will at least probably be in the major league infield at some point in time. How is that going to have an impact, Gil? And how concerned are player development people about perhaps being treated as experimental subjects, I guess, in some instances?
You know, factoring in where, you know, the exact position where a player is going to be playing on the field, and then tailoring practice repetitions and development towards that. That, I mean, that's a challenge that we face in the big leagues as far as how many reps to get players at certain spots. So it's something that we're definitely aware of. We don't have a formula or a science in order to best apply that right now at the practice level. But I think it's something where, you know, our infield coaches are definitely spreading around the reps and making sure guys are practicing at least in the different positions they'll be in. As far as the experimentation, you know, I think the way that we, you know, as an industry, but also the way that we as a staff and our players will continue to get better and improve is just to be as open-minded and experimental as possible. Not just with obviously the rules on the field, but, you know, with different training methods, with different practice techniques, with different ways of deploying lineups and things like that. So, you know, I think all our staff is, you know, we're used to pushing ourselves on looking at things a little bit differently. And so that, you know, that's pretty much the same when we're going about these rules. And with some of these differences and challenges, you know, also come some opportunities to see people in different spots, to challenge people to think a little bit more, you know, while you're out there about, you know, how does this impact the game today? So, you know, we're all for it, and it'll be interesting to see.
Okay, whenever I talk to Pete Walker, I talk to him quite a bit about the young pitching, and the first guy he always wants to talk about is Nate Pearson, and he'll ring off some things that he looks for, like his tempo, like his mechanics, like his work on that third pitch that you need being a starter, his mound presence. I want you to put on your scouting hat. If you're going to watch Nate Pearson tonight start, what would be one of the things that I just mentioned that you would really key in on that you think would take Nate to the next level?
Right now, I think with Nate, it's a focus on smoothing it out and controlling his delivery, and then filling up the strike zone. So, you know, I think with Nate, he's got elite tools across the board. He's physical. He's aggressive. He's maintained that fastball velo in the upper 90s, still hitting triple digits. He has an outpitch slider. Changeup is also a quality pitch. And then he's got that curveball to add in there too. So he has the stuff. He has the velo. He has the physicality. You know, we're prioritizing him being as healthy as possible, and him being able to command and execute his pitches. And one way that, you know, we'll be able to see that is through that tempo in his delivery, and seeing maybe a little bit more of a smoother look in the delivery in order to help all those other things we just mentioned.
Gil, the fact that he is going to be at AAA to start the year, and Alek Manoah is going to be at AAA to start the year, do you guys see a little bit of internal competition maybe taking shape here? And I mean that in a good way.
Yeah, we hope so, and we hope there's internal competition everywhere throughout the system, because, you know, when you're pushing each other and when you're competing to the highest standards and trying to outdo each other, while obviously at the same time you have that basis and foundation of caring for each other and being great teammates to each other, you know, that's only going to help both of those young men progress. It's only going to help our other players progress. It's going to help us grow as an organization. So, you know, whether it's Austin and Jordan in AA, or it's Nate and Alek in AAA, or it's obviously you've seen internally, we have a ton of competition within our catchers. We just see that as a positive. And these are all young men who at their nature, man, they are good, caring human beings, and they care about their teammates, and they try to help each other. And that's been sort of the coolest thing we've seen throughout some of these programs and spring trainings when they've all been together, is how much they're willing to help each other. And so without a doubt, I think there is some internal competition, but it's all positive.
Okay, I got to ask you about trust, and trust between the catcher and the pitcher. I know Riley Adams is in the big leagues, a young guy. You know, he's made the jump from one level to the big leagues. That trust in season when pitchers have already had, you know, some trust with another catcher. As a coaching staff, how do you get them to mesh together quick enough for it to be efficient and give this team a chance to win when he's behind the plate?
The biggest way we can do that is to think ahead for it and to prepare for it. And that's something that Pete Walker, Matt Bushman, John Schneider, Nevin Ashley, our catching guys in the minor leagues, really did a good job of emphasizing, you know, actually starting from last year. I remember when Kirky got called up, he was on the taxi squad, and from day one, really, it was it was helping to transition that game planning mindset. So, you know, the group of staff I mentioned from day one in spring training, that was a priority for every catcher who was there. And obviously Riley was there. So he's been learning those pitchers, establishing relationships, learning the game planning, at that advanced level, really since spring training. That's continued through the alt site. Obviously there's going to be transition periods, but we know there's going to be some ups and downs with any transition to the big leagues, and we're, you know, we handled it with Kirky and Riley. Again, Riley is an intelligent young man. He puts a lot of time and effort into studying game planning and learning the pitchers, and so, you know, he's somebody that he's going to adjust to it as quickly as he can. And as he does that, and as he puts forth the effort that he has been, that's where the pitchers will learn to trust him. But I think both Riley and our staff have done a nice job, you know, since day one of spring training, of preparing for this.
Gil, we really appreciate your time today. Thanks so much. Safe travels and continued success.
Yeah. Good luck.
Thanks.
Thank you. Appreciate being on here, guys.
Take care. That's Gil Kim. He is director of player development with the Blue Jays.
Yeah, that's a rocky road for me. It's one
what
of
is?
Those it, well, that catcher-pitcher relationship, yeah, where it's a lot to ask a pitcher to think his way through every single, yeah, start. And when that catcher puts a finger down, there's a lot of trust there that he knows what he's talking about, and he's done enough homework to know that I'm putting it down for a reason, and I know this guy's probably not going to be able to get barreled to baseball. That's the whole thing. And if it doesn't go right, is there enough trust there that when he does put it down, they're going to trust that, you know, that was just one of those things where the guy in that position was getting to the ball. That'll be an interesting thing. It'll be an interesting thing to see how much they use him.
Yeah. I mentioned that Juan Graterol is down in the, minors. The Jays brought him in. Reese McGuire is down. Neither of them are on the 40-man roster, so a move would have to be made. And you know, just looking at some of the other available catchers out there, free agents. I mean, you know, keeping in mind that, again, as far as we know, Alejandro Kirk is expected to be out for a month and a half. You know, I'm looking at a list here, and nothing. Nothing really jumps out at me, to be honest. You know, if you're asking me, would I almost rather just have Reese McGuire? Although, again, you have to make a 40-man roster move. So I guess the question is, can you do better than Reese McGuire? If you're going to have to make a 40-man roster move anyhow, can you do better than Reese McGuire? And I'm mm-hmm. just looking at some of these names here right now. There's not a lot out there. And I don't know if some of these guys are even still playing, if they've retired. I'm looking at Francisco Aria, Steve Barron, Wilkin Castillo.
All of those people would take time for them
Francisco
to come in here.
Francisco Cervelli, I believe, is
how good guys can be, yeah, and what they want to throw and when they want to throw it. And it's a time period. I know these guys are younger.
Yeah.
You just can't overuse him, and you hope Danny can.
Eric Kratz is out there now.
Yeah.
Eric Kratz. I'm going to start the campaign.
You could do worse than Eric.
I'm going to start the campaign. The eyes of Major League Baseball will be focused on the Bronx tonight. I've been waiting for this for a while. I think every baseball fan's been waiting for this for a while. I'll explain what we've been waiting for when we come back. It's Baseball Central on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. right. You know that the Bronx has been looking forward to this night for quite some time. That was Jose Altuve walking off the Yankees and Aroldis Chapman in Game 6 of the 2019 ALCS. And oh my, if we only knew then what we know now. Mm-hmm. You remember that picture of Altuve keeping his jersey closed as his teammates mobbed him? It was like baseball's version of the Zapruder film, as I said. It was everybody assumed that after Rob Manfred came out with his report that showed that the Astros had cheated using the garbage can banging thing, everybody looked back at this video and said, you know. And then in a subsequent interview, it looks like he's got something on his chest. So that led people to think that maybe there was a buzzer involved. Now, of course, Aroldis Chapman, the Yankees closer, in spring training last year, was asked about it. And all he said was his line was, a lot of people have seen the video. It's certainly interesting. Well, the pandemic hit last year, so the Yankees and Astros haven't had a chance to face each other since then.
Mm-hmm.
Spring training this year, the Yankees train in Tampa, the Astros train in West Palm Beach, but because of COVID, the teams didn't travel across the state. I'm getting a little excited here this year. So Kevin Barker, tonight will be the first night the Astros and Yankees have met.
Yeah.
Since that 2019 walkout, since Rob Manfred's report, and oh yeah, it's in the Bronx. Now there's only going to be 11,000 fans there, the 11,000 Yankees fans.
Yeah.
My guess is about 10,168 are going to be in the bleachers. I'm going to ask you this, because I'll tell you right now, Aroldis Chapman, first chance he gets, he's dusting Jose Altuve.
You think so?
You
think they got, the Yankees got a one-run lead. Altuve's
don't think it matters. What? It's what's the date? One-run lead. What's the date? It's May 4th. Yeah, absolutely.
Huh.
I think
Yankees
this.
Yankees been struggling, too?
The really? Yankees are over 500. Now, come on. You waited 2 years for this shot.
What's it solve?
Doesn't solve anything.
Absolutely nothing.
But I'll tell you what, we know. You know, the Yankees have had that thing with Tampa Bay going on now for 3 years. Guys are throwing to each other.
Yeah.
And Chapman was a guy who threw over Mike Brousseau. Like, Chapman has got this in him. Chapman has got this
in
him. Yeah,
without a doubt. I'm not sure I see it. I think it's a lot more about...
Man, don't spoil the narrative.
I think it's a lot more about beating them and
really? Oh, good. We won three of... Or,
I think so.
We took three from the Astros on May 4th.
Total news. Yeah, you squaring up Altuve. What's that going to do? Make you feel better?
Joe Kelly, when the Dodgers last year. Well, he got into it with Carlos Correa with the little pouty thing.
Interesting. We'll be tuned in to listen, watching.
Dugout's clear in this series, yes or no?
Yes.
Okay.
I don't think it's because somebody gets hit. I just, maybe somebody, Chapman might throw a ball over somebody's head. I don't know if he's going to hit him or not, but he might throw it over somebody's head.
He's throwing a ball
and draw a line and say, come out here and get you some, which is kind of cool.
He's a big man.
He's a giant human.
Like, I don't think I'm...
I wouldn't either.
He's got some...
I get my buddies.
He's got some pretty nasty tattoos, too.
He's something else.
Yeah. I always tell people, you know, that they're big human beings. They're massive human beings. He's a big man. He's just a big, big man.
That's a boxing thing in the offseason, too, which...
Yeah,
big
that's
to
right.
boxing.
Yeah, I would not.
Not sure I'd run out there, Altuve.
You know that. You know that.
He would spin him like a basketball.
Altuve just run underneath his legs.
I don't know. I don't see it, but let's hope it does. For baseball's sake, let's hope it does.
that's it, Barker. So. For baseball's sake, let's hope there's a brawl in the Bronx. Well, look, the Yankees fans, you know, earlier this year, they were throwing balls, but that's when they were pissed off at the Yankees. Remember that game against Tampa Bay? They were pissed off at the Yankees, and they're throwing the ball right there.
Stanton.
Yeah, listen, kids, I don't want you to think that Kevin Barker's sitting here saying that he hopes there's a brawl tonight and that it would be good for baseball.
I didn't say that.
You said it would be good for baseball.
It wouldn't be bad for people to tune in. How many people you think are going to be watching that game tonight? A lot.
I think it's going to be pretty interesting.
Whatever gets people to watch.
I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
Hopefully nobody gets hurt.
Yeah, that's right. That's what we don't want. We don't want anybody.
Hold me back. We want to see lots of hold me backs.
Yeah, you do not.
That's the way baseball fights are. Hold me back.
Yeah.
I'm going to
grabbing a guy. Hold me back.
You know, they give that little 2-second warning, like I'm standing there until somebody grabs you, and then they act like they're coming.
Yeah, exactly. Hold me back.
Yeah.
That's where, you know, the one thing you know about baseball brawls, that's how you find out, that's where you find out who are best friends in the other teams, right?
Yeah.
You see two guys like go at each other right away, you know, okay, those two guys are friends, or they got the same agent or something like that.
Yeah, I remember winter balls, those things that break out, I'd be the only guy sitting on the bench. Not a chance I'm going out there.
Really?
No. You ever seen a winter ball fight?
No.
They take their shoes off and their spikes. Not a chance. No chance. I'm waving at them, and I guess.
But you know what? Was it expected that the import player wouldn't get involved in the fight?
It doesn't matter if it's expected or not. I do not care.
So there you go. Kevin Barker.
I do not care.
Kevin Barker won't get involved in a fight. But he wants to see the Astros and Yankees brawl because it is, quote, good for baseball. Ain't that something? Oh, God. All right. For Kevin Barker, I'm going to say I'm Baseball Central, but I'm not. I'm Jeff Blair. For Kevin Barker, we'll be back tomorrow. Don't go anywhere. Writer's Block is next. Good for baseball. My ass.